Imagine you have like 12 hours to build an entire organization from scratch.
Oh, wow.
Right. A literal overnight business proposal. You're in this crazy pressure cooker environment, surrounded by evaluators who basically hold your future in their
No
hands.
pressure or anything.
Yeah, exactly. And if you fail, your dream career is just over. Now, imagine the guy you've been randomly partnered with for this massive undertaking looks at you and says, I think this is just busy work. We'll wing it tomorrow.
Oh, no. Please tell me he didn't.
He does. He orders a Domino's pizza, eats it, and goes straight to sleep.
I mean, that is the ultimate nightmare scenario for anyone who has ever, suffered through a group project.
He really
You're
is.
just left holding the bag, sweating bullets, doing like all the market research, formatting the slides, building the entire strategy,
All of it.
while the person who is supposed to be your teammate is literally snoring in the bed next to you.
It's infuriating. But hey, welcome to today's deep dive. And if you are a fellow member of Harmony Christian Church, you are in exactly the right place today.
For sure.
Our mission today is to thoroughly unpack Pastor Kent Wagner's latest sermon in the Ecclesia series. We want to get you, and well, all of us, completely primed and ready for our Connect Group discussions this week.
Yeah, and Kent actually opened his message with that exact nightmare group project scenario.
He did. It was wild.
So he was describing a church planting assessment from years ago. And for those who aren't familiar with these assessments are essentially this grueling 360-degree review of your financial, spiritual, and psychological health.
Yeah, they really put you through the ringer.
They do. The evaluators are trying to see if you can actually handle the intense stress of starting a church from nothing. So as a final exhausting test, they just blindside the
Like
candidates.
a pop quiz.
Exactly. They pair them up and say, go back to your hotel and design a church plant for a specific city overnight. Demographics, marketing, locations, core values, present it to us tomorrow morning.
I mean, it is a literal shark tank for churches.
That's exactly what it is.
And Kent, being, naturally anxious and wanting to have every single detail figured out, stays up all night. He's researching the city, he's creating the PowerPoints,
Writing out the mission statement.
right, figuring out the granular details of how they are going to attract their first 50 people. And his overly confident
Look at
partner,
this guy.
yeah, a guy who had already casually claimed the title of senior pastor for their fake church before doing any work, by the way.
Classic.
He does absolutely nothing. He just eats his pizza and sleeps.
And, the psychological dynamic the next morning is just fascinating. So they get up to present to the sharks.
Yeah.
The confident partner starts talking, tries to wing it, and immediately flounders. He has, like, no idea what the demographics are or what the strategy is.
Shocker.
Right. So Ken has to step in, run the PowerPoint, and essentially carry the entire presentation, desperately trying to make them look like a cohesive team.
And Kent doesn't even throw the guy under the bus in the moment. He tries to survive the presentation.
Yeah, he takes the high road.
But the evaluators, they see right through the facade. They look at the sleeping partner and ask this devastating question, like, how much of this did you actually do?
Oh, man.
Busted.
Completely. The guy is finally humbled and has to admit he did absolutely nothing. Kent mentioned he was smiling like the Cheshire Cat on the inside, just watching this guy squirm.
I would be too.
Right. But we need to look at why Kent told this story. I mean, this isn't just a funny anecdote about a lazy partner and late night Domino's.
No, not at all.
Kent used this exact, highly relatable frustration to diagnose what is happening in the modern church, including right here at Harmony.
Yeah, he really held up a mirror to how most of us operate when we sit in the pews on Sunday. He made this profound, defining statement. A team where everyone plays for themselves is not a team.
Wow, yeah.
Right. When you're on a group project and only one person is pulling the weight, the project might technically get finished, but the team itself is completely
It's
dysfunctional.
broken.
Exactly. And Kent's argument is that we have allowed the local church to become a dysfunctional group project. We let a tiny handful of people stay up all night doing the work, while the rest of us, we just show up the next morning to take credit for being part of the team.
Which brings us to the absolute core of the Ecclesia series. We use the word church all the time, but the Greek word in the New Testament is ecclesia.
Right.
And it doesn't mean a building, it doesn't mean a corporate structure or like a Sunday morning event.
No, it's a combination of two words that literally mean the called out ones. It refers entirely to the people.
the people.
Yeah, the church is you and me. Yeah. It is not a geographical location you drive to on Sunday morning.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the style of worship music being played.
Yeah.
It's not even the sermon being preached.
Which is funny because Ken actually joked that people often rate his sermons.
Yeah, he gave himself a 4 out of 10 for that morning's message.
I loved that. But his point there was incredibly sharp. He said, if you walk out to the parking lot on Sunday and say, church was boring today, you are fundamentally misunderstanding the entire concept of what we are doing.
Completely missing it.
Because if ecclesia means the people and you say the church is boring, you are literally just saying that you are boring. You're critiquing yourself.
That is so good. It completely dismantles that whole consumer mindset.
It really does.
Because the ecclesia is supposed to be God's active team in the world, you know, actively advancing his kingdom. But Kent points out this major systemic malfunction in our culture.
Yeah.
We've allowed our faith to devolve into a spectator sport instead of a contact sport.
He ran this analogy by Josh Walls, and I think it perfectly encapsulates the problem. Josh noted that modern church has become like a football game.
Oh, yeah. The football analogy.
You have thousands of people sitting comfortably in the stands watching 22 exhausted people run themselves ragged on the field instead of thousands of people working together for one common goal.
It's so true. And Kent also brought up UK basketball to illustrate the absurdity of our posture.
As you have to in Kentucky.
Right. It's mandatory. So you go to Rupp Arena, you sit in the stands, eating your hot dogs and your popcorn, and when someone on the court dunks the ball, you jump up and cheer as if you achieved something.
Like we won.
Exactly. You high-five the person next to you, but you didn't do anything. You didn't practice, you didn't sweat, you didn't run the play. You just consumed the entertainment provided by the athletes.
Okay, so I have to ask the question that is probably on everyone's mind here, and something you should all really be chewing on for your Connect groups this week.
Okay, let's hear it.
If we are supposed to be the players on the court, why do we so naturally default to the bleachers?
That is the million-dollar question.
Is it because culturally we view our tithe as a sort of ticket price?
Oh, interesting.
Like, we are so conditioned by subscription models. We pay for Amazon Prime. We pay for a gym membership. We pay for Netflix.
Right.
Do we subliminally treat the offering plate like a box office? Like, I gave my money, therefore I am entitled to sit back, eat my spiritual popcorn, and be entertained by the paid professionals on the stage.
Wow. Yeah. That consumer conditioning is incredibly deep-seated. We view the church as a vendor of religious goods and services,
yeah,
rather than a family or a team we are actively a part of.
A vendor? That's a brutal way to look at it, but it's true.
It is. And that raises the next major issue Kent tackled. If we're supposed to be out on the court playing the game and we aren't paying for a Sunday morning performance, then what exactly are we paying Pastor Kent to do?
What's his job?
Right. What is his actual biblical job description? To answer that, he took us into Ephesians chapter 4, verses 11 through 16, where Paul is giving essentially a locker room speech to the church in Ephesus about how the team's leadership is actually supposed to function.
Paul lists the specific leadership roles that Christ gifted to the church, and we really need to look at how these roles interlock as a system because it completely shatters how we usually view the staff here at Harmony.
Oh, totally.
Paul mentions apostles, prophets, evangelists, pastors, and teachers. If we look at the first group, apostles and evangelists, these are the expanders of the church.
The ones pushing outward.
Yeah. Apostles are the church planters, the missionaries sent to establish new works from scratch in uncharted territory. And evangelists have this unique outward-facing drive.
And Kent's description of an evangelist was amazing.
It was hilarious.
He said they are the kind of people who can sit down at a Mexican restaurant, share the gospel with their waiter, and have them baptized in the margarita machine 30 minutes later.
I mean, we all know someone like that.
We do. They just have this supernatural ability to declare the good news and bring people into the fold rapidly.
Right. And then you have the internal navigators and caregivers, the prophets, teachers, and pastors.
Which is where Kent puts himself.
Yes. And Kent clarified that a prophet in this context doesn't mean, like, a fortune teller predicting the future with a crystal ball.
Right. It's not about the future.
A prophet is someone who speaks God's truth with piercing clarity into the current cultural context. Kent specifically identifies his own primary gifting as a prophet.
Which makes so much sense.
It explains why so many people walk up to him after a service at Harmony and say, I felt like you were reading my diary today.
Yes. I've heard people say that exact thing.
It's not a magic trick. It's the specific spiritual mechanism of a prophet cutting through the noise and speaking truth directly to where people are living.
Absolutely. And that brings us to the teachers, who instruct people deeply in theology and obedience, and finally, the pastors.
And this is where the massive paradigm shift happens for most of us.
Yeah, hold on tight for this one.
The Greek word for pastor is literally shepherd. It's someone who intimately cares for God's flock, binding up their wounds and guiding them through life.
But in our modern culture, we point to the guy with the microphone on the stage and call him the pastor.
Exactly. Mm. But Kent looked out into the congregation and specifically called out guys like David Birchfield, Urschel, and Brent, who leads the men's small groups. He said they are the true pastors. They are the shepherds doing the granular life-on-life care at Harmony.
Understanding that interlocking system leads to the defining aha moment of the entire message, honestly.
Let's hear it.
Why did Christ give these specific leaders, these apostles, prophets, evangelists, shepherds, and teachers, to the church?
Why?
Paul explicitly states in Ephesians, it is to equip his people for works of service.
To equip?
The mechanism of church leadership is not to execute all the ministry. The mechanism is to equip the congregation so that the congregation executes the ministry.
Man, and Kent made a deeply vulnerable confession here that we really need to sit with. He said he lives with a constant low-level guilt of disappointing people.
That was hard to hear.
It was. He is the lead guy, so everyone expects him to be their shepherd. But if he tried to have just a 10-minute meaningful conversation with every single person in the room during a Sunday service, it would be mathematically impossible.
The day would end before he even got through a fraction of the room.
Yet the congregation implicitly expects him to pull it off.
Because we have relegated the massive, complex ministry of an entire spiritual family to a handful of paid professionals.
Right.
Kent mentioned getting 20 to 30 Instagram reels a week from well-meaning people messaging him, you have to watch this.
Yeah.
Or people constantly handing him stacks of books saying, you have to read this.
Like he has endless free time.
Right. The expectation is that he needs to process all this information and curate everyone's spiritual journey.
It's like we are treating Kent as our personal spiritual concierge.
A concierge, yes, that's exactly it.
We want him to fetch our resources, solve our theological problems, and hand deliver our spiritual growth. And when we act like this, we are accidentally suffocating our equipper.
We really are.
He is drowning in our demands for his personal time while we refuse to do the actual ministry ourselves. We're sitting on the bench during a tied game, and when the coach hands us the playbook and says, get out there.
Yeah.
We just lean back, eat our popcorn, and say, you can do it, coach. We're cheering for you. Let us know how the game ends.
It's completely absurd when you picture it in that sports context.
Mm-hmm.
But we have totally normalized this behavior in our church culture.
We have.
Kent's role as a prophet and equipper is to teach, to challenge us, to raise us up, and to hand us the playbook. Our role is to get on the field and execute the plays.
And when a congregation suffocates the equipper and refuses to get off the bench, there is a severe consequence. It literally stunts the congregation's development.
That's bad.
It results in a bizarre and disturbing lack of spiritual maturity, which Paul addresses directly in Ephesians. He literally calls the church infants who are tossed back and forth by the waves.
Infants?
Paul paints a picture where Christ is the perfect mature head of the church, but the body, meaning us, is infantile.
And the visual Kent put on the screen to illustrate this was just unforgettable.
Oh my goodness, Perry.
Yes. He got permission from Perry, our security guy, to show a childhood picture of Perry as a baby.
Hmm.
But Kent had photoshopped Perry's current adult, fully bearded head onto the tiny infant body.
The congregation got a huge laugh out of it.
They did. But, you know, the underlying psychological truth is incredibly sobering. Paul is begging the church to stop being a baby with an adult head.
Right.
Stop having the vast, mature mind and knowledge of Christ at the top, while possessing a tiny, underdeveloped body that cannot actually walk, lift, or work in the real world.
We listen to hours of teaching, we take notes on complex theology, we read the books, the head is full.
But the body has zero muscle mass.
It's like skipping leg day, but for your soul.
That's a great way to put it.
We have the perfect mind of Christ, but we possess the spiritual muscles of a toddler because we never actually put weight on the bar.
Yeah.
So how do we start lifting the weight so our bodies match our head? How does an infant body actually grow up?
Well, Kent shifted from that funny Photoshop image to a deeply moving real-life medical story to explain the mechanism of how we need to grow.
Yeah, tell us about that.
He talked about a young boy in his former youth group who had severe asthma as a baby, and the powerful medications and chemicals required to open his lungs and keep him alive had a devastating side effect.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they stunted his physical growth. So as a teenager, he was significantly smaller than all his peers. He was getting pushed around at school, and he was struggling deeply with his emotional state and self-worth.
That's heartbreaking.
Especially because everyone else in his family was naturally over 6 feet tall.
So what did they do?
Well, his parents had to make a terrifying medical choice. There were new growth hormones on the market, but they came with serious potential risks and side effects.
That's a heavy decision.
It is. They had to weigh the danger of the hormones against the very real physical and emotional damage their son was suffering by remaining artificially small.
Right.
And they ultimately decided the risk of staying small was greater. So they gave him the growth hormones.
And it worked, right?
The treatment worked. Ken said he ran into this young man years later as an adult, and the guy was huge.
That's amazing.
He was physically bigger than Kent, and he'd become a firefighter.
Oh, wow. Seriously.
Yeah. He had grown into a mature man, capable of doing a physically demanding, heroic, life-saving job. And Kent said he thinks about that young man all the time when he looks out at the church.
Kent said, "What I wouldn't do to be able to give the church spiritual growth hormones, to just snap my fingers overnight so we would wake up, be the ecclesia, and finally grow up."
Because the world is desperate. The world needs to see the actual functioning body of Jesus acting as his ambassadors.
Absolutely.
But a toddler cannot pull someone out of a burning building. We cannot do the heavy lifting of a spiritual firefighter if we remain happily infantile on the bench.
So let's break down how a spiritual growth hormone actually functions in our day-to-day lives, which brings us perfectly to the actionable takeaways for your Connect groups this week.
Okay, let's get practical.
How do we take the hormones? How do we get off the bench at Harmony? You know, a hormone in the body often works by stimulating cellular activity, causing a bit of friction and growth.
Right.
In our spiritual lives, the growth hormone is the micro stress of stepping out of our comfort zone.
And Kent provided a massive relief valve here for anyone feeling overwhelmed by this.
Which is so helpful.
Taking these spiritual growth hormones doesn't mean you have to jump from sitting on the bench to being an absolute superhero overnight. Mm. He specifically pleaded with the congregation, like, please don't leave the service and immediately try to start a massive, complex, nonprofit organization building tents for the homeless.
Because that is a recipe for burnout.
100%.
The application is so much closer to home. He used the analogy of Kansas basketball.
I love this one.
In the state of Kansas, basketball is such a religion that everyone plays. They have A teams, B teams, C teams, all the way down the line.
Right.
You might be the uncoordinated kid running the wrong way down the court, but you are in a jersey and you are in the game. There is a place for every single person to play at Harmony.
And those micro stresses, the growth hormones, start with two incredibly practical immediate steps. First, simply learn the names of the people sitting in your row on Sunday morning. Look at them, introduce yourself, and tell them you are going to pray for them this week.
That's it.
That's it. You don't have to counsel them or solve their marital problems. Just take on a tiny fraction of the burden of being the interconnected body of Christ by knowing who you are sitting next to.
It's so manageable. But the second step is where the real friction happens.
Oh, yeah.
Kent challenged us regarding the closing song, Give Me Jesus.
Right.
Typically, the people who are really struggling, who are carrying heavy burdens, go down to the front of the auditorium for prayer. But Kent pointed out that the mature thing to do, the action of an adult spiritual body, is for the people who don't currently need prayer to walk down to the front and pray for those who do.
Wow.
You don't have to know them. You don't have to know what their crisis is. You just lay a hand on their shoulder and pray.
And we really need to analyze why that simple act feels so impossible for so many of us.
It feels terrifying to some people.
Walking down an aisle to pray for a stranger requires us to shatter our carefully constructed, comfortable routines. And Kent asked a piercing question. Why do we settle for being consumers instead of contributors?
Yeah.
He acknowledged that in a large church like Harmony or at a mega church like Southland, it is incredibly easy to hide.
So easy.
You can slip into the back row as the music starts, eat your spiritual popcorn, watch the production, and slip out to your car without ever having to be known or inconvenienced by another human being.
And as you prepare for your Connect groups, this is the exact psychological barrier you need to discuss.
Yes, lean into this.
Are we weaponizing Harmony size to hide from our responsibility?
Oof. That's a tough question.
When we sit in the pews and realize we don't know the name of the person next to us, is the real reason we don't introduce ourselves and offer to pray just a deep-seated fear of being weird?
Honestly. Probably yes.
We are terrified of social awkwardness. But Kent reminded us of the very definition of the word ecclesia. It means being called out. If you are called out of the general population, you literally aren't supposed to be normal. Stepping out of line, facing that micro stress of social awkwardness, and being radically different is the entire point of our existence.
It is. You have to make a conscious decision about whether you want to remain a passive spectator or become an active participant.
Yeah.
Pastor Kent's job is to equip you. His job is to hand you the playbook and explain the mechanics of the game. But he physically cannot run the play for you. The body only grows when the body does the work.
So, as we wrap up this deep dive, let's clearly define your mission for your Connect Group discussions this week.
Let's do it.
First, honestly examine where you are currently sitting on the bench. Second, acknowledge that the staff at Harmony are gifts meant to equip you, not to be your personal spiritual concierges.
No more concierges.
And finally, figure out what your specific immediate play is, whether it's learning a name or walking to the altar, to help this baby body grow up to match the maturity of our head.
And before you head into those groups, there is one final lingering thought built directly on Kent's message that every single one of us needs to wrestle with.
This statistic absolutely blew my mind when he shared it.
Same. Kent casually dropped a financial reality that is almost hard to comprehend. He noted that if every single person sitting in an American church simply obeyed the biblical command to tithe,
just tithe,
there is enough latent wealth sitting in the American church right now to completely eradicate world hunger.
That is just wow.
The resources already exist in the pockets of the congregation to solve global starvation tomorrow.
But it doesn't happen. The money stays in bank accounts and people continue to starve because, as Kent diagnosed, we are babies with adult heads.
Yeah.
We have the theology of generosity in our minds, but our toddler bodies refuse to open our hands.
It's convicting.
So ask yourselves in your Connect groups this week, what other massive global crises are simply waiting on the baby body of the church to finally grow up?
It is a staggering reality. The world is quite literally waiting on the ecclesia to mature.
We have to become the firefighter. Well, thank you so much for joining us for this conversation. We hope this primes the pump for a fantastic, challenging Connect group discussion this week.
Have a great time in your groups.
Remember, you don't want to be the guy eating Domino's pizza while everyone else is up all night building the church. Get off the bench, accept the micro stress, and get in the game. Have a great week, Harmony.